Coming up on Golf Today, the Korn Ferry Tour schedule for 2025 is out, and KFT President Alex Baldwin is stopping by to dig into the details on one of the strongest tours in the world. Now, Justin Thomas missed the President's Cup in Montreal, but he is back in action in Japan. He's also talking about 2025, not just his game, but impending fatherhood as well. And how about a little Tiger Tuesday? We look back on Tiger's 82nd win at the Zozo in 2019. And hey, let's dish on what his 2025 might look like. Here's the good health on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Some live golf headed your way on Golf Channel. Some of the top college programs are in action in Oklahoma City for the Jackson T. Stephens Cup. Live coverage coming up later today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. As we settle in to watch some college golf in just a little bit, this is a Tiger Woods Tuesday. I can't help but think that we wouldn't be watching college golf on Golf Channel without Tiger Woods' greatness over the last 20 years.
And probably wouldn't be watching the PGA Tour in Japan later this week if it wasn't for Tiger Woods' global impact as well. A lot of focus on those pathways to the PGA Tour these days through the college game and through the Korn Ferry game as well. Everyone's trying to find that road to be the next Tiger.
Well, someone who knows where he's going. How about Braden Thornberry? Do you remember just a few weeks ago, Thornberry punched his ticket to the PGA Tour with a win in the Korn Ferry Tour Championship presented by United Leasing and Finance. Thornberry, he will join us in the second hour today. Can't wait to talk to him. He shot that final round 66 and vaulted to 16 on the Korn Ferry Tour points list. One of 30 players, by the way, who made their dreams come true. Always that emotional Sunday on the Korn Ferry Tour, the final day, the reward being the hugs, the tears, the champagne flutes, the mortar boards. You move that tassel from the right side to the left side as you graduate to the PGA Tour laser light show. You got some pyrotechnics. There's a hug with the KFT president, Alex Baldwin, who will join us in just a little bit to talk about the new schedule for 2025. 26 tournaments in all, a four-event Korn Ferry Tour finals, 30 PGA Tour cards awarded at season's end, 10 televised events on Golf Channel, and one new event in Mexico in May. And Alex Baldwin, president of the Korn Ferry Tour, joins us now. Great to spend some time with you, Alex. Before we look ahead to the new schedule in 2025 on the Korn Ferry Tour, I want to ask you what works so well in your mind in 2024?
2024 was an extraordinary season, and I think one that will be remembered very, very fondly. You know, just a few weeks ago, we saw our number one player, Matt McCarty, go out and win a PGA Tour event in his third PGA Tour start. It was certainly an extraordinary accomplishment, and I think very, very reflective of the exceptional talent that we have on the Korn Ferry Tour. So it was a great year. It's an exciting class that we've graduated and will be seeing playing on the PGA Tour in just a few months.
Now, how about 2025? 26 events, no domestic events until April. Familiar Bahamas start, both events on Golf Channel. Why does that cadence work so well in your mind looking ahead to next year?
You know, it's an exciting opportunity for us to begin kind of with that global footprint, right? The global marketplace and really showcasing the best of PGA Tour golf, if you will, in international markets. And the opportunity to start in the Bahamas, we've got a new host venue with Atlantis and the Ocean Club, with television, with the Golf Channel, allows us to introduce our membership. Really, really exciting opportunity to be able to see these guys as they embark on this 26 tournament season to earn their PGA Tour cards. And being able to play some of the best golf courses in Latin America is also a tremendous preparatory environment, preparatory opportunity, competitive test. We've got the Jockey Club with the Argentine Open. An Alistair McKenzie designed golf course has hosted world competitions. And then we're also adding a fantastic golf course in Tulum in Mexico. Mexico with our return to that market, and PGA Riviera Maya. So really great start, great opportunity for our guys to prepare, to develop, to compete, and to show us sort of the best talent that we have.
On the subject of what they're actually competing for, Alex, last week, Camilo Villegas, the chairman of the Players Advisory Committee, sent a letter to tour members saying that there will be a vote by the policy board next month on potential changes in terms of pathways to the PGA Tour, and suggested that there's a proposal to eliminate as many as 10 Korn Ferry Tour cards from the current 30. Is that something your tour is supportive of in terms of the broader picture of where the tour is going?
You know, Eamon, I think a few things I'll certainly emphasize. Our pathways and the pipeline that we've established from the Korn Ferry Tour is incredibly strong, and it is continuing to prove that it is developing and transitioning some of the best players to play on the PGA Tour. And certainly, obviously, Camilo and the work that the PGA Tour PAC is doing is something that we are, you know, tracking and awaiting to sort of see ultimately kind of what that recommendation is. But I can, you know, certainly continue to emphasize the importance and the strength of the Korn Ferry Tour as that primary pathway to the PGA Tour.
Given what's been happening in terms of the cadence of the actual PGA Tour schedule itself with signature events, and also a proposal to potentially reduce to 120 the full field sizes, there is a sense that Korn Ferry Tour graduates who've earned the card are finding it a little bit more of a squeeze to get the starts that they ought to feel entitled to for having earned that spot. Do you think that's a sentiment that's valid, that there's a little bit of concern that the guys who've earned that card aren't perhaps getting as many opportunities to use it as they might have expected?
You know, I think what, again, referencing some of the work that the PGA Tour PAC is leading, you know, there is a tremendous opportunity to really sort of define what the value of a PGA Tour card is to this membership, and to ensure that every year, as these new tour grads go on and tee it up at the beginning of the year and the start of the PGA Tour season, that they have that fair and equitable chance to not only retain their PGA Tour cards, but also to go out and win. So, you know, certainly supportive of continuing to finding that really right balance for our tour grads to be able to have the strongest position possible as they start their PGA Tour careers.
Alex, when you mentioned 2024, you brought up Matt McCarty, who had the 3-win promotion to the PGA Tour and then won in Utah at the Black Desert Championship, joining Jason Gore as the only players to do so in the same season. What kind of impact does that have on your membership, seeing what Matt McCarty was able to do?
It's so validating. It's fulfilling. I think there's an enormous amount of pride to see Matt go on and do great, great things that I think we all, you know, recognize and expected candidly from him. He's a tremendous competitor. He is someone who, you know, really worked his way up through the ranks. Wasn't a PGA Tour U graduate. He came through our qualifying school system, and through his 3 years on the Korn Ferry Tour, worked incredibly hard, improved his position each year, and ultimately, you know, having that opportunity to show, you know, the world and golf fans what he's capable of. So just really, really exciting. I know we are very, very proud of him, and as are his fellow Korn Ferry Tour members.
What was your reaction then when he went back to the Korn Ferry Tour after getting those 3 wins to ensure that he earned the top spot on the Korn Ferry Tour points list, getting fully exempt, getting those exemptions into the Players' Championship and the United States Open?
Damon, that number one spot means something. And to see that race really start to percolate, I'd say, kind of in the spring, you know, when Harry Higgs won back-to-back right after Tim Vieting's back-to-back wins, and Harry making that commitment to play on the Korn Ferry Tour to really make a run for that number one spot, those starts, both at the Players as well as the U.S. Open, are really, really meaningful. And certainly, I think that number one spot should continue to garner additional benefits that is truly commensurate to the accomplishment.
Yeah, that number one spot does have a tremendous value, Alex. Beyond the fully exempt status, we're at numbers 2 through 30 on the points list. They're subject to various priority reshufflings in the Byzantine system the tour uses during the course of the year. Is there an argument to be made that more than just the number one finisher on their Korn Ferry Tour ought to have that fully exempt status to prove themselves, that maybe it ought to be the top three guys or the top five guys?
I think, again, we continuously are looking at the data, Eamon, in terms of how these guys are performing once they do get to the PGA Tour. So I think there is a real opportunity as we continue to sort of look to the future and providing kind of that reward from a meritocracy perspective. And there is, you know, again, using that data to be able to demonstrate sort of the career trajectory of those, you know, number one, two, three players and top five. And how we do continue to award them. So certainly an area that we're paying close attention to.
I'm going to keep harping on this point because you're kind of the commissioner of meritocracy, because you oversee all of the pathways into the PGA Tour with the PGA Americas Tour. PGA Tour University also falls under you. 15 amateurs have made cuts on the PGA Tour this year, and most recently at the weekend in Las Vegas. Is there also an argument to be made that the more than just the number one finisher in PGA Tour, you as a pathway, ought to garner status on the tour as well?
There certainly is an argument to be made, and one that we are continuously sort of looking at that performance. It is a lot of fun to watch. I think it's something that golf fans are really, really leaning into. Have to give a lot of credit to the collegiate golf landscape and the preparatory environment that is provided to these young men at that stage in their career. And, you know, I'm very proud of sort of the ecosystem and how we've sort of synchronized these properties in a way to allow that mobility and provide these players sort of different options. And even looking at a player like a Freddie Ketterup, right? Another three-win promotion on the Americas, earning his Korn Ferry Tour card. He now will have an opportunity at Q School to sort of potentially earn that top five spot to go right to the PGA Tour, bypassing the Korn Ferry Tour altogether. These systems really work well together and are thoughtfully designed with benefits at each and every stage to provide kind of that step, that gateway, right, for these players. And no two journeys are alike. I mean, it's the grit, it's the glory, it's the hardship, it's the triumph. Honestly, for me personally, it's the best storylines in golf, and continuing to sort of think about how robust the ecosystem is with that opportunity and mobility is a priority.
And speaking of grit and long journeys, maybe nobody embodies that more than Tim O'Neill. Now, we often look at what the Korn Ferry Tour players are doing on the PGA Tour. Did you have an eyeball at all on 52-year-old Tim O'Neill, who has also played on the Korn Ferry Tour, who broke through in Virginia on Sunday?
Yes, he was. It's certainly very exciting. And I think, actually, I just got an email a little bit before this interview about three APGA members who have advanced from first stage to second stage through qualifying school. So we're seeing, you know, the continued success of those players and a lot of the investment and time that partners have made, that we organizationally have made to help provide those pathways.
Well, Alex, we're looking forward to 2025 and the Korn Ferry Tour. We appreciate a few minutes, and we'll speak to you soon.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day.
Quality of the Korn Ferry Tour is unquestioned. It's hard to win out there. The graduates do well on the PGA Tour. But you were peppering Alex about pathways, and if has been bandied about, the number of PGA Tour cards sometime down the road is lessened. Wouldn't that tighten up the pathways, narrow the pathways, make it more difficult to make the leap from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour?
It certainly seems there is a drift these days that would logically reduce the pathways or narrow the pathways, because the PGA Tour's policy board is voting next month on the idea of not just reducing the number of people in a full field event to 120 from 144 to 156 right now, taking away 10 of the 30 Korn Ferry Tour cards, and potentially reducing the number of fully exempt players on tour from 125 down to 100. That's going to have a trickle-down effect into the Korn Ferry Tour as well. And you also can't ignore the DP World Tour in this. It's a very important part of this strategic alliance. It's going to be an important part of whatever deal is made to shape the future landscape of this game. Right now, there are 10 DP World Tour cards coming in every year, given to players who are not otherwise exempt on the Race to Dubai standing. So there are multiple pathways. There are more pathways onto the tour than ever. But they are definitely going to tighten up. I would just argue, just make the Monday qualifiers bigger as well. That's great theatre.
It is
on
great
Mondays
theater.
And televise them as well. But it's going to be harder and harder for Corn Ferry Tour guys to actually find their way there.
One thing she did say that I completely agree with was that she believes that the best stories in golf are on her tour. That's the story of the grind, the hardship, the journey, the joy, and sometimes the pain as well. I mean, we've seen players do great things from the Corn Ferry Tour. We've also seen players languish out there, be oh so close, not get it done. Maybe it's a 15, 20-year wait like a Tim O'Neill. I think she's right. There are a plethora of great stories out there on the Corn Ferry Tour.
There are, but the Corn Ferry Tour is very much the journey. It's not the destination
for
any of these guys. And it's, you know, it's a matter of pride for graduates of the Corn Ferry Tour or winners out there not to be around to defend their title. You don't want to be there the next year, which doesn't really happen on any other tour, I suppose, at that level. There are great stories, and I would argue there is no more stressful day in golf than that Sunday at the Corn Ferry Tour Championships, when literally every stroke has a potentially disastrous impact on a guy's efforts to reach that PGA Tour card. And then you start, as we've had people on the show in the last few weeks, talk about what it's like sitting there for hours and hours wondering through your season scorecards. Where did the shot go that cost you the points that suddenly would have put you on the PGA Tour, and now you're on the wrong side of the bubble? It's an extraordinarily tense, dramatic day out there every year. But again, it's people want out of the Corn Ferry Tour. It is the pathway to the best tour in the world. They don't want to be lingering too long.
Nobody wants to be Crash Davis from Bull Durham, Kevin Costner, the all-time leader in home runs on the minor league circuit. Everybody wants to make it to the show. That's the destination, and it's a hard destination to get to.
And it's getting harder and harder with every passing year, that's for sure. Well, Justin Thomas is making his first start since the Tour Championship this week at the Zozo in Japan. Not been the best of seasons for Thomas. We're going to hear from him coming right up.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, the PGA Tour's fall schedule kicked off in Napa, California. Last month, Patton Kizzire hugged a tree and won the Pro Court Championship by 5 shots for his first victory in 6 years. And after a short break for the President's Cup, the Tour then headed to Jackson, Mississippi for the Sanderson Farms Championship, where Kevin Yu defeated Bo Hostler in a playoff and earned his first PGA Tour title.
The Tour then shifted gears to a new venue in Utah for the Black Desert Championship. New PGA Tour member Matt McCarty, who won 3 times in the Corn Ferry to earn his promotion, then won his first PGA Tour event in his 3rd start in Ivins, Utah, keeping that ball out of the lava just enough. And then on Sunday at the Shriners in Vegas, JT Poston shot that final round 67 to earn his 3rd PGA Tour victory, holding off Doug Gim for the win. How about the upcoming schedule on the PGA Tour, the FedEx Cup Fall, as it is known, Zozo Championship this week, Worldwide Technology Championship, Butterfield Bermuda Championship, then the RSM Classic, St. Simon's Island, great golf and barbecue and warm chocolate chip cookies, if you're into that kind of thing.
Well, one guy who's looking for a spark like those other winners this year, Justin Thomas, hasn't been the best of seasons, 5 top 10s and 24 starts, his best a tied 3rd. At the MX, a lot of important missed cuts, though. The Players, the Masters, the US Open, all the way down to 32nd in the official world golf ranking. Hasn't won since the 2022 PGA Championship. And while you were sleeping, he met with the media in Japan.
I was chomping at the bit to get here. I've missed the time off is nice, but if I don't compete for a long time, I get... not bored, but I want to get back and playing in tournaments again. So I'm it had a good mixture of a little bit of time off and, you know, got to spend some time with some family and some friends. And but I've also been working really hard. I've been excited to practice and been really excited for the opportunity to play and compete this week. So although it's been an enjoyable time off, I'm very happy to be back and playing the tournament again.
You've had 4 wins in Asia already, so Japan might be a good spot to get your 5th.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've been had a lot of success in Asia. Don't worry, I've definitely thought about that. So, yeah, I don't know what it is. You know, I've played some good golf and won some tournaments kind of this time of year, and I guess in this part of the world. So, like I said, I'm excited to be back and have an opportunity to hopefully get the, you know, my fifth victory in Asia and you know, a new place for me.
So you're expecting a baby in November. So are you? What's your mindset for this week before you get him, before you becoming a dad?
Yeah, I would. Any golf shot or situation I am in this week, and it's not going to be anything close to as hard as it's going to be in a month or so when our little one comes. But I mean, we were very fortunate with the timing of being able to come for me being able to come here. I think reality will probably set in when I'm flying home and then when I get home, because it'll be getting in crunch time. And you know, I know my wife's going to be an unbelievable mom, and I'm excited for the opportunity to, you know, raise a little girl, and it's going to be great. But this week I'm focused on business and trying to win a golf tournament, and then it's time to go home and get ready to be a dad.
Are you mentally prepared for becoming a dad?
I don't think you ever are. All I know is I'll be as ready as I possibly can, and we're going to, you know, make the most out of every situation we can. But I can't tell you honestly if I'm ready, because I've never done it before. So I'll let you know in a couple months. But it'll be a challenge in different ways, but one that we're excited for.
A lot going on in the world of Justin Thomas these days, certainly outside the ropes. 15-time winner on tour. It's kind of hard to believe. 2.5 years since that last victory at Southern Hills in the PGA. What do you see, big picture, that explains that kind of drought?
I tell you what, it's shocking that he was not in Montreal to me. This is someone who's a fixture on those American international teams since 2017. Got picked to go to Rome for the Ryder Cup, even though he didn't make the playoffs. Made it all the way to Atlanta this past season, but wasn't selected for Jim Furyk's team. And you have to think, there was a time when Keegan Bradley was a fixture on these teams. And then he went quiet, went dark for a decade until Montreal kind of rescued him. I don't think Justin Thomas is going to be bereft, absent from these teams for a decade. I think that Montreal was a wake-up call. I think it's a one-off. As you mentioned, he's a 15-time winner on the PGA Tour, a two-time major champ, a former number one player in the world. And he has shown some form over the last couple of months, T5 at the Travelers, played very well, got all the way to Atlanta. I think he's going in the right direction at a very important time of life for him as well.
Yeah, it's certainly got a lot of complications going on. We've seen this happen before with, say, Spieth and Ricky Fowler, that fatherhood puts a lot of time pressure on these guys as well. You know, life just simply gets a little bit more complicated. It's tough to make those teams, though, when you're not making putts. And that's really been Justin Thomas's issue over the last few years. His ball striking is still elite level. I mean, he's dropped off a little bit, strokes gained off the tee. I think he's 77th on tour this year. He was a fixture in the top 20 for most of his career. Still a great iron player, but it's the putter that has been killing him. He's 167th through this year on the PGA Tour. He was top 50 in his first couple of years out there. If you went back to 2017, 2018, when he was really making his name out there, won the PGA Championship, he was top 50. He's only once been inside the top 100 in the last 6 years, and that's just too inconsistent to get it done out there at the level that he expects of himself.
And the putter also puts pressure on the rest of your game. If you're not making putts, it puts pressure on your driver. It puts pressure on your irons. I also wonder about the pressure of being a Tiger Woods protege on this Tiger Tuesday. I saw Jason Day up close when he was kind of learning at the knee of Tiger and talking about not just being a number one player in the world, but a dominant and long-lasting number one. And similarly, Justin Thomas, very close to Tiger. Tiger's a unicorn. You know, they say in the NFL, you know, he has a heavy motor. You know, he brings it every single day, every single play. Practices the Super Bowl. You know, training camp is the Masters. That's a hard energy to maintain. And I just wonder, I watched Jason Day beat himself up a little bit. Justin Thomas will beat himself up from time to time when the golf isn't going that way as well, when it's not going the way you want it to. Listen, learning at the knee of Tiger Woods has got to be valuable, but it's also got to be very, very difficult to try to maintain that standard.
And a lot of guys at this level, they'll also tell you that the scores don't necessarily reflect how well they're playing. Sometimes that can be true. Justin Thomas, I think it was the Masters this year, he finished double bogey, double bogey, bogey, double bogey to miss the cut by one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to leave anyone in a rage out there. So the game hasn't been that far off, but the problem is the margins out here are so minor for these guys that it's really difficult to actually make any mistake at all and expect to keep pace with the guys around you. 32 in the world doesn't seem like a fair representation of Justin Thomas. Well, the ZOZO Championship is, as we noted, in Japan this week. Here is your viewing schedule. Every night, starting Wednesday night, because of the time difference, 11 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel, all the way through Saturday night when the final round gets underway.
Speaking of the ZOZO, never a bad time, I say, look back at one of the greatest careers in golf history. Tiger with 82 PGA Tour wins. Number 82 came, of course, in Japan. What was it like to be there to witness Tiger's record-tying PGA Tour victory in person? Todd Lewis was there, and he's here coming up. We're back on golf today. As mentioned, never a bad time to look back at one of the greatest careers in sports. Let's just say it, Tiger Woods, 82-time winner on the PGA Tour. It includes 15 major championships and so many unforgettable moments over the past 30 years. Of course, the 2019 Masters, what a moment that was. Now, some news from Tiger's team this week as the schedule was announced for the first season of TGL, which will kick off in January. First match between New York Golf Club and the Bay Golf will be held Tuesday, January 7th, 9 p.m. on ESPN. Top four teams at the end of the regular season will advance to the playoffs beginning on March 17th. You flash back now on this Tiger Tuesday to the 2019 edition of the ZOZO. Here's Tiger on the par 3 13th. He's aiming for 82 career wins.
How refreshing it is to look back and see what appeared to be a healthy Tiger Woods swinging the golf club. We just don't get to see that much anymore.
Yeah, we have to kind of luxuriate on these highlights. The par 5, 14 for birdie.
That extended his lead to 3 strokes at the time.
I see in the red shirt, black vest. Here he is now on the par 4, 15th wedge game. Just almost always dialed in.
This from 102 yards, went on to make par.
He's kind of chewing on some gum, you know, smacking the Wrigley's like Pat Riley used to do on the sidelines for the Lakers and the Knicks. Now here's Tiger on the par 4, 17th. This for, he's got a 2-shot lead, but he wants a little more.
He's going to get it right there, okay. But it's enough to secure the par and maintain that lead. Heads on to the par 5, 18th. This, his third.
Oh, that thump. You like to hear that thump. Oh, the crowd knew it was good. Going to set himself up for a birdie. I mean, giving the fans in Japan what they came to see, Eamon.
This, the birdie for the victory, wins by 3 over the hometown hero, Hideki Matsuyama.
Number 82 and a very cool trophy, I would say.
This is what Tiger did in that final round. He started, as some of us do, 3 straight bogeys, but of course he went on to make 9 birdies, shot 64. Friday play was called off for a large storm in Japan that year, but he shot 19 under, beat Hideki by 3, tied Sam Snead with his 82nd career PGA Tour victory. And of course, the highlight of so many of Tiger's wins was this. He got to meet Todd Lewis. Afterwards, this on the 18th green, Tiger's last to now PGA Tour victory. And Todd Lewis joins us now to reminisce. And Todd, you had the pleasure of doing those kind of interviews with Tiger Woods so many times when he was holding the trophy beside you out of those 82 victories. What was the most memorable of those?
Well, without a doubt, in my opinion, for me personally, professionally, this was the most memorable because of the history that just happened in front of us for him tying Sam Snead, winning for the 82nd time on the PGA Tour. And I can tell you guys, we've all talked to Tiger Woods, both casually and professionally, and we've all interviewed him after he's achieved some great things. And I had the opportunity, after he tapped in, to interview him greenside right there before he signed his scorecard. And I knew how big this moment was. And I am not a person that is motivated by fear of failing, but I did have some little voice in my head saying, Todd, considering he just tied the all-time mark for wins on the PGA Tour, don't screw this up. So there was a little bit of that. And I think one of the things, besides the fact that we were noting history with Tiger winning 82 times now on the PGA Tour with that win in Japan, let's not forget, he was also the captain of the President's Cup team that year. He had yet to make his selections for his captain's picks. And one of the questions I asked him after winning on that green was, how do you think the captain will receive this victory that you have in Japan? Talking about himself, he said, I think I did impress the captain. And ultimately, he picked himself and led Team USA to a victory at the President's Cup in Melbourne. But yeah, it was an incredible moment, a very, very special moment I'll never forget in my career.
Special indeed, T. Lou. What was so strange, though, was the fact that it was overnight, that this player who has always had this spotlight on him, this microscope on him, it's overnight in the United States, so maybe didn't have the eyeballs that it normally would, at least here in the U.S. How about on the ground in Japan? Did it feel like a big moment, like a huge moment, like an iconic moment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I felt like I was at a major championship. The Japanese fans, they love golf, as we all know. And yes, they were there to see the most famous Japanese golfer ever in Hideki Matsuyama, but they were also there to see Tiger Woods compete in this event. And you're right. If you remember, it wasn't just a large storm that happened that week. It was a monsoon that came in and washed out play. I remember the par 4 10th, which is a dogleg left over some water. There was so much rain that fell, they converted that into a par 3 because the hole was just not playable as a par 4. But despite all that bad weather, I mean, they were 12 to 15 deep wherever Tiger was. And every time he hit a shot, I don't care if it landed in the fairway or if it landed in the rough or even in the penalty area, I mean, he got such a positive reception. And for him to win that event, I think was significant the fact that he is an international superstar. And for him to get the 82nd win outside the United States, I actually think that's kind of cool because he lifted golf maybe better than anyone, maybe better than Jack Nicklaus, maybe better than Arnold Palmer from a global perspective. So I thought it was a really special moment.
He was almost 44 years old when he lifted that trophy, Todd. And he hasn't won since in the 5 years. His body had been through the ringer pretty much even then, and certainly more so since. Did any part of you watching that and being there and interviewing him have it in the back of your head that this is the last hurrah? Or you're a romantic like all of us. Do you still think there's another bullet in the chamber?
At the time, I thought he was going to get 83 for sure. I mean, if you remember that year, I mean, he just won the Masters. He was playing well. So, yeah, I thought that 83 is, you know, it's just a matter of when, not if. But then, of course, he had that terrible car accident in Southern California, and that has obviously slowed him down tremendously. Does he still have a shot to get number 83? You know, I sure hope so. It's going to depend a lot on how this latest surgery is, if indeed his back is going to be able to respond properly, because that has been the issue more than his leg over the last year or two. Because of all the pressure that is now on the rest of his body since his right ankle is fused. If he doesn't have as much pain in the right environment, I think he does have a shot for sure to compete because he hasn't forgotten how to win, and he's the best manager, in my opinion, game manager in the history of golf.
Well, speaking of manager, he's been the captain. He's an investor in TGL. He's going to be competing in TGL. He's a couple years shy of age 50. He likes to joke about getting a cart very soon and being on PGA Tour champions. Where do you see him now, just in terms of the evolution of Tiger Woods? Would it surprise you to see him in the 50 and over set, you know, bumping elbows with Stephen Alker and Tim O'Neill and Jim Furyk?
Well, let's first talk about his immediate future. He announced not too long ago that he's had this back procedure that's going to sideline him for a while. The recovery, from what I understand, is going pretty well. I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that he's going to play the PNC Championship, which is, of course, you know, he can team up with his son, Charlie. Charlie really wants to obviously play at that event once again, but it's not as strenuous on Tiger. He only plays two competitive rounds. He can ride a cart. So I think there's a better than 50-50 chance he'll play there. I'm not sure if he's going to play the Hero World Challenge in December. We'll have to wait and see. But I think he might play one or two more events now if this surgery takes place or if it goes in a positive direction. And, you know, there is a lot on his plate with TGL and everything. But after he turns 50, from everything that he's told me and he's told other people around him, he wants to play PGA Tour Champions events. That's something actually he's looking forward to. I mean, he wants to get out there, and just like Mr. Palmer, just like Jack Nicklaus, just like all the great legends that went on to play on the PGA Tour Champions and had success, he wants to follow that path. So yeah, I think he's excited to compete after 50.
The PNC's obviously one of the favorite weeks of the year, and just watching Charlie carry the old man for a couple of rounds out there is there an argument could be made, Todd, that Tiger underachieved, given the time spent rebuilding swings, the time lost to injuries, for all he has done in golf and set a record that just seems absolutely unimpeachable? What could it have been without those down periods? I mean, there was a five-year gap before he actually won the Tour Championship a year before the Zozo.
You know, I've heard people say that he has underachieved, and I don't know if that's accurate. I mean, if you think about what he was doing to the game of golf, he revolutionized golf. Let's not forget about the fact that he urbanized golf. He made it more popular globally, but the fact that he did so through physical conditioning, the fact that you look at all of the players now on the PGA Tour, they are all incredible athletes, and they are following the trend that Tiger Woods set. And it may have been experimental at the time for him to get himself into that intense shape that it caused some of these injuries, but at the same time, he did push his body and his mind and his game to a level that really hasn't been seen since Jack Nicklaus. So I don't think he's underachieved. I think he's had some unfortunate circumstances with his body. You know, and some of it you could argue like he did to himself with his training and so on. And I get that. I understand that. But it wasn't because he wasn't determined. It wasn't because he wasn't driven. It was because he was actually obsessed with being the best on the planet and having a legacy that he has. And so, no, I don't think that he underachieved at all. I think, if anything, he was definitely on path, if not overachieved in his career.
Well, to that point, Tilu, I've talked to some golfers who have said he's the most underrated golfer of all time. As many accolades as he gets, the 82 wins, the 15 majors, that at the height of his power, he was so good that no one could even touch him. They didn't even know what he was doing. That it was like a child trying to, you know, their children competing with a man. It was just that dominant. Have you ever heard that sentiment, that we don't even understand how good Tiger Woods really was, height of power?
Yeah, I kind of lean that way, Damon, and here's why. Not only all the things that you just said, but if you consider how the depth of global golf when Tiger was competing compared to, let's say, Jack Nicklaus, where Europeans and internationals weren't competing on the PGA Tour as frequently as they are now, that I think that without a doubt, Tiger Woods, I mean, was... If I was asked who's the greatest of all time, I get to ask this all the time, is it Jack Nicklaus or is it Tiger Woods? But again, considering the competition that he had and the depth globally and what he was able to do and how different and how he revolutionized the game, I'd have to lean towards Tiger Woods right now.
And the influence is still continuing, Todd. Obviously, a member of the PGA Tour's policy board. He's the only member of the board who doesn't have an assigned term that he's going to serve on that board. When you see everything that's happening for the future landscape of the game now, including the potential for reducing the number of fully exempt players out there on tour, do you think that kind of policy change makes it a little easier to pass a vote because Tiger Woods is an advocate of that or is in a position to influence it? Because if anyone's going to make the argument, hey, boys, play better, it's going to be Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt he's got the heaviest hand, in my opinion, on that PGA Tour policy board. He has been very vocal, although he is not out there inside the ropes, as the other policy board members are, but he has been very, very vocal about making sure that the PGA Tour has a positive legacy and its combative, his business combat, I should say, with at the time with the public investment fund, LIV Golf. But now, you know, we're trying to see how this all shapes up. And Tiger is an influence in that as well, because he's part of this transaction subcommittee. You know, I think Tiger Woods right now in his career has a great appreciation of what he's done for sure. But he also has a great appreciation of what the PGA Tour is has given him in regards to opportunity. And he looks behind him now in the rearview mirror at the players and the personalities that are coming up behind him and following him on the PGA Tour. And he wants to make sure that they do have a positive opportunity for a great legacy as well. And I think he is very passionate about that. I think he is just, from the people that I've talked to and talking with Tiger Woods as well and people in his camp, that his passion right now to make sure that the PGA Tour is in a positive space moving forward is equal to the same passion that he has in trying to win number 83. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Tila, you've been a part of so many big-time interviews. We thought you'd be the perfect guest to reflect on 2019, and we were right. So thank you for joining us, Tila. We'll speak to you soon.
You got it, my friends. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, well, Golf Today continues. Some of the best college programs are competing in the U.S. at the Jackson T. Stevens Cup in Oklahoma. Amelia Migliaccio will stop by for a preview. She's part of the broadcast team and joins us next. Welcome back to Golf Today. We're leading you into live second round coverage of the Jackson T. Stevens Cup. Coverage follows us here at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. Well, both number one teams are in the field. Oklahoma for the men, Arkansas for the women. And in addition to Arkansas, there are four other top 20 programs for the women, including number two, South Carolina, and the defending champions of this event, Wake Forest.
Our colleague, Amelia Migliaccio, will be on the call this afternoon in Oklahoma City. And she had quite the amateur career herself, spent 5 years as a Wake Forest Demon Deacon, and was part of a national championship team in 2023, which defeated Southern California, much to the glee of this UCLA Bruin. For more on today's coverage, we say hello to Amelia now. It's great to see you, as always. Let's start with the venue, Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club, absolute gem. What have you noticed about the course and how it's played so far in competition?
The course has played hard. The wind was up yesterday, gusting up to 30 miles an hour. They've also grown the rough out. So if you miss a fairway, some of the players could barely find their golf ball. Jim Gallagher, who was on the course yesterday, there were a number of times where he finally found the ball, and now he is yada, yada, yada into the hole. But it's a really hard golf course, playing tough, which I believe separates the good teams from the players that still have work to do. So it's been fun to see. Wind is down today, so the scores should be lower, but will still be a test.
It's nice to actually learn that good players can lose their golf balls as well. What do you make of the format this week, Amelia? They played 36 holes yesterday, coming out for another 18 today. Is there a fatigue factor here?
Definitely a fatigue factor. However, most college players have played 36 holes before. My first ever college event was in Kiawah Island. We played 36 holes. So it's something that the players are used to. But I love the format. I love the fact that you get three rounds in to crown an individual champion. And then I think all these coaches are loving any tournament that has some match play element. They're all thinking to the postseason and what LaCosta is going to bring in the NCAA championship. So when I've spoken with the coaches, they've all loved the format and they're really excited for those players to try and get their teams into those top four spots for match play tomorrow.
I used to be able to play 36 holes. Now my elbow starts barking. What stands out to you, Amelia, on the men's side of the competition to this point?
Well, what's really impressive is SMU. They played really well. William Sides is even par right now. He has a one-shot lead going into the final round today of the individual portion, but definitely coming off of some momentum. They made it into the NCAA's tournament this year, and it was the first time since the 2020-2021 season. So coming off of some momentum. Oklahoma, they're number one in the country, didn't play well yesterday. I spoke with Ryan Hibble this morning, and he said his players struggled a little bit on the green, so I expect them to be making a chase into those top two spots for today.
What about on the women's side? Any particular team or player you're focused on today, Amelia?
Well, of course, Carolina Chikara, the leader at 4-under, only player to shoot under par yesterday. She had a very tough summer. She missed the cut in the Women's Western and the U.S. Women's Am, which was also a Perry Maxwell design at Southern Hills. But I spoke with head coach Kim Llewellyn yesterday, and she said that her golf IQ was the best she's ever seen in hard conditions. She said that Chikara played really smart and aggressive to conservative spots. That's how you attack a really difficult golf. Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club. Lottie Woad, the number one amateur in the world on the women's side. She's right there. Hannah Darling, they're all in that top 10 spot. So I expect them to be pushing Chikara come into the final round today.
Amelia, as we wrap up the fall season, how much of this time of year do you think will carry over to the spring for some of these teams? Or is this just the fall is the fall and the spring is the spring?
Lots of coaches use the fall to plan for the spring. In qualifying, for example, Arkansas men, they've had four different starting lineups trying to figure out who is going to be that starting five for the spring. Oftentimes, coaches won't qualify as much in the spring just coming into the postseason. So the fall is a great opportunity to learn and develop, see where your team is at and where everyone needs to improve come the spring. So it's very important to be looking at the fall come postseason.
Looking forward to watching you and some golf this afternoon. Amelia, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, of course. Thank you both.
And here's how you at home can watch the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, 4 p.m. Eastern today on Golf Channel, following Golf Today. And tomorrow, also 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel. More golf today after this.
The undisputed number two is back to work this week. Xander Schauffele has been a Zozo Championship in Japan. That's where his mother grew up. We're about to hear from the man who began this year as the best player never to have won a major. He's going to end it with two. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today.
We're getting closer to live golf on this Tuesday. The top college teams in the country teed up in Oklahoma City for the Jackson T. Stevens Cup. Live coverage coming your way, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Welcome back in. Golf Today, hour two rolling on. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. It's a bit of a rare treat on a Tuesday to actually see live golf.
I 100% agree. You took the words right out of my mouth. I'm looking forward to seeing these young people for a second straight day. Great programs, incredible weather, sunshine, Perry Maxwell designed golf course.
It's taken its pound of flesh out of them as well, that golf course.
It has been very windy, but maybe the wind will have died down just a little bit today. Both number one teams, by the way, are in the field. You got Oklahoma for the men, you got Arkansas for the women. In addition to Arkansas, there are four other top 20 programs for the women, including number two, South Carolina, and the defending champs for this event, Wake Forest. How about an early peek? Let's send it out to Steve Borkowski and Amelia Migliaccio.
Damon, the good news, the wind is down near record-setting temperatures on this Tuesday in Oklahoma City. Thermometer going to hit close to 90 degrees, and Eamon just mentioned it. The men and women in the field yesterday, they got their money's worth with winds gusting up to near 30 miles per hour. Not going to be the case today. Someone that handled the wind really well yesterday, Carolina Chikara from Wake Forest, 4-under Amelia for the first 36 holes.
Head coach Kim Llewellyn told me she only missed three greens in 36 holes, and with those gusts up to 30 miles an hour, that is next level golf.
Right now, Chikara at 4-under, currently a four-shot lead over Kiara Romero. This was a moment ago. Chikara at 15. And continues to play extremely well. Ryan Potter, the associate head coach from Wake Forest, sharing with me it might be one of the most impressive days of golf he's ever seen in his time in the collegiate game. Speaks volumes to how talented she is.
Oh, and I love the fist bump that she gave when she made that putt. Chikara is a momentum player. If she starts out strong today, she will finish strong.
There is head coach Kim Llewellyn alongside. Individual champs going to be crowned on this Tuesday. Also the top four seeds after stroke play concludes. a few hours from now. They're going to move on to match play. The top four teams moving on to that for the men and women on Wednesday. Here's a look at the individual leaderboard for the ladies. There is Chikara, the only player under par. But look at those giving chase. Kiara Romero, the National Freshman of the Year a season ago for the Oregon Ducks. And, oh, by the way, work to do for Lottie Woad, 8 off the pace. But she is the top-ranked amateur in the world. You never want to count out Lottie Woad, the junior from Florida State. She is seemingly in the mix each and every time she tees it up. So too, this man, her teammate, if you will, on the men's side, Luke Clanton from Florida State. He, too, the number one-ranked amateur in the world. He grinded it out yesterday, Amelia. Didn't necessarily have his best stuff, but it's a testament to what this team means to Clanton, who's had so much success on the PGA Tour.
And what the best players are so good at is assessing their game and what they need to work on, and they do such a great job at actually improving that next day. Clanton said he got a little bit frustrated out there with the wind, but already a short birdie putt in hand. If he wants to move up this leaderboard, he's got to make this one.
Clanton, 5 over, 5 back. Let's make it 4 back. Kind of sums up the first couple of days for Luke Clanton, also a junior for FSU. And you think about it, the folks in Tallahassee have the top-ranked amateurs in the world for the women's game and the men's game. But in college golf, most weeks you count the best 4 score. So as good as Clanton and Woad normally play, got to get a little help from their teammates. We head up to 9. Matthew Troutman from Oklahoma just over the green. No issues there for Troutman.
Yeah, it was chipping back into the slope, but didn't matter. That was perfect aim and speed.
And if you were with us last night during the coverage, Troutman was not going to be denied finishing up in the dark on that final hole on Monday. And when I'm telling you it was dark, Amelia, there were plenty of other players saying, we'll finish up here today.
I doubted Troutman for a little bit. I did not think that it was a good idea to finish, but he got away with par, which is all you can ask for.
The other way, right?
I was wondering the same thing.
Go to the tee at 8, Ryder Cowan from Oklahoma. And this was a hole very intriguing as players trying to force it down there, even with the windy conditions, to try to get it as near to the green as possible.
It was a back hole location, so theoretically the play is if you get it down there, you have enough space to work with, even if you've short-sighted yourself. Wind is down today. The wind has switched a little bit. It's technically still into, but with the wind being down, these players should be able to go for it, which is why they appear to be waiting for the green to clear.
Individually for the men, Tyler Weaver from Florida State, he's at even par. 1 clear of 3 other players. You got a couple of Oklahoma State Cowboys, 2 shots off the pace. And a day where we're expecting to see better scores, considering that the wind is noticeably less than we saw, but it's also a different direction as well.
Slightly different direction. What's key today is there are some accessible hole locations out here, as well as hole locations where you have to play smart. So you need to be aware of when you should be attacking and when you should be laying back.
All right. As you said, these guys waiting. So you have the feeling that Ryder Cowan, Tyler Weaver, and Jerry Gomez are going to be full send, especially on this last day of stroke play, trying to maybe win an individual title and secure a spot in the match play for their teams as well.
If you're airing, you want to be on the right side.
As hard as I can hit it.
You heard him say that's as hard as I can hit it. Almost flew it on to the front third of the green.
Which is why you want to be on the right side, because now he has all that space to work with. That left bunker, short left bunker, is just not going to be the play. Going to be really hard to make up and down for birdie.
All right, Tyler Weaver, his turn. Again, the man leading the way at even par. Cut that one in there.
It's about 300 yards to get to the front of the green, and that should be a pretty basic chip from there, just short.
So really good shot there for Tyler Weaver. He's going to have a wonderful opportunity to pick up a birdie and add to his advantage. Team format also in play here. Again, the top four schools after today, they're going to move on to match play. So things looking good for San Diego State, Oklahoma State, SMU, and Oklahoma for the men. But we know things can change in a hurry. South Carolina leading the way for the ladies. One clear of Oregon. There is Arkansas, the top-ranked team in the country, in third. And it is a battle for that four spot. You're not going to want to miss it, guys. Our coverage coming your way soon from Oklahoma.
Berko, can't wait. We'll see you at the top of the hour. We invite you to take a break from work. Watch a little college golf, the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, 4 p.m. Eastern time today. And then tomorrow, the final day of the Jackson T. Stevens Cup from beautiful Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club, 4 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow as well.
Now, over on the LPGA Tour, Australia's Hannah Green shot a 1-under par 71 in the final round of the BMW Ladies Championship in South Korea. That secured her third LPGA Tour victory this season, held off Celine Bouvier by a single shot for the sixth win of her career. And here's a look at where the LPGA Tour heads next this week, the Maybank Championship in Malaysia. Then heading to Japan. Finally, the Lotte Championship brings them back to the United States the first week of November. Then the Amica, driven by Gamebridge, that's in Florida. And finally, the CME Group Tour Championship wraps up the season in November.
Amy, let's flash back to May, though. The Mizuho Americas Open at Liberty National in Jersey City. Nelly Korda took the title by a single shot over Hannah Green for her sixth win in seven starts on the LPGA Tour in 2024. And with the win, became the first player since NB Park in 2013 to win six times in one season. It has been an incredible season for the world number one. And yesterday on Golf Today, as part of our roundtable discussion, Beth Ann Nichols and Grant Boone offered some interesting perspective on her season and the Player of the Year race.
Nelly Korda, something of a mixed bag for all the highs and all the successes and the wins and the awards coming her way. She's now back on the DL again. What's the latest in terms of her health status?
Well, she used the word minor, so, you know, I fully expect to see her at the Pelican, which is, it came out today that she's committed, of course, to play in those last two events. So, you know, I'm not really too overly concerned about her health right now. You know, I think, you know, it's tough going over to Asia after a long year, and maybe she just needs a little bit of extra time to get everything in as good as she wants it. But you know, I definitely think, as I mentioned with Hannah, you know, it's been an historic, incredible year for Nelly. But then on the other hand, it's been a mind-blowing year for Nelly. When you look at those horrible scores at two major championships, it went from can anyone stop Nelly Korda to can Nelly Korda make a cut in a major? So it was amazing how fast it turned around. And then, of course, at the AIG Women's Open, she had a chance there. It looked like she had it in her grasp and then just sort of gave it away down the stretch on Sunday. Unfortunately, this season, we could talk about it in so many different ways if just a few things had turned just a bit.
Grant, I'm curious. You know, some would say, Nelly, just go out there, make birdies and eagles, and that is your job. Others would say, we need you to transcend, cut through, be a superstar. It seemed as though as the year wore on, we saw her a bit in commercials, Met Gala, that she became a little more comfortable in letting us in. Do you see an evolution, or is this someone who's never going to be an extrovert as maybe many would like her to be?
I think you always have to be who you are. At the same time, you need to recognize what your responsibility is. I mean, Mike Juan came up with the term act like a founder. Not every single one of those was a Patty Berg who was, you know, a pistol and just would tell everybody, here's where you need to be on this pro-am day, or here's what we're doing for this clinic. Not everybody is like that. I think Annika Sorenstam is a good example. Annika was the introvert's introvert and told stories about losing tournaments as a junior on purpose because she didn't want to give an acceptance speech. But Annika stepped out, went to Colonial, where all she could do was fail in the estimation of many, and she represented the LPGA Tour. She did things that maybe weren't in her comfort zone. So I think Nelly has already done what she thinks is a lot, and there will always be people who want her to do more. Go be on the Today Show. Go be on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Go take these opportunities to transcend the tour. That's what you feel like this tour needs so often. It's a bit unfair to ask of them. Whereas Scottie Scheffler, you know, who was on ESPN College Game Day the other day making picks, you know, he can kind of pick and choose whatever he wants, and the PGA Tour is always going to be a bit more popular. But for Nelly, I think it's always going to be, you know, something that she's not comfortable with particularly. But I think anytime you do anything like that, if you're Nelly, you feel like, hey, I've done this. And at the end of the day, I'm here to speak with my clubs. And she certainly spoke at a volume that we haven't heard in decades, if ever, the first half of this year.
Well, we certainly wouldn't encourage Nelly to get arrested at a major championship to draw some attention.
Whatever it takes, whatever it takes.
Nelly Korda won a gold medal in Tokyo, and so did Xander Schauffele, the X-Man, back in Japan at the Zozo, and he's showing off his favorite major trophy. You'll hear from him coming up. We're back on golf today. Storybook season for world number two Xander Schauffele. Back in May, broke through for his first major, a closing birdie on the 72nd hole at Valhalla to win the PGA over Bryson DeChambeau. Winning one major, that's tough. But the floodgates opened, ladies and gentlemen. We asked of it for these players, and that's exactly what happened. Good vibes rolling on to the summer. A second major at the Open at Royal Troon. Final round to remember with four birdies and six holes on a difficult back nine to seal the deal.
If you're going to win, win big. He had 15 top tens and 21 starts this season. Those were the two victories, helped towards both of them by a final round 65. He's the first player since Jordan Spieth 9 years ago to earn his first two career majors in the same season. He was also runner-up three times, the Players' Championship, the Truist Championship, and the FedEx St. Jude Championship. And overnight, Xander met with the media in Japan.
So looking back to your season, you won two majors, and how was your season?
It was a dream come true. Winning two majors in this season is, you know, you sort of dream of that stuff, and for me to be able to do it is very special. So I will always remember 2024.
So you brought the Kradish jab to Japan this time, and then are you going to show it to your grandparents?
Of course, yes.
Congratulations on an amazing year. Just wanted to ask you about Chris Como and the influence he's had on your career thus far.
He's been tremendous. I've known Chris for maybe 10 years now, but I've only been, you know, working with Chris for pushing probably just under a year, close to it, call a year now. And yeah, I mean, I trust him a lot. I have put a lot of sort of faith in what he's telling me, just believing everything he's telling me and trusting everything he's telling me. And it's a scary thing, obviously. I've had pretty much the same coach my whole life, and to get advice from someone new and sort of to put your whole, I guess, all of my tournament trust and feels and everything that goes into sort of competing at a high level, you know, into his corner was a really big deal for myself and my team. So, you know, Chris is an awesome individual, and definitely very happy that he's part of my team.
I noticed that you mentioned that you were bringing the claret jug to Japan. Do you have a preference for which major you won?
I'm not picky. It's just the Wanamaker is
it's a bit big.
You can't put it in the carry-on, I can say that much. It's like a massive trunk.
Okay, you had an amazing 2024, as we know. What do you think you need to do next year to win Player of the Year?
I mean, it seems I need to have the best career ever, you know. I just had my best career ever, and you know, it wasn't really close. So yeah, I'm pretty, you know, content with how I played and where my game is at. So if I can keep on doing what I'm doing, I'd be very pleased.
Obviously a great year with those two majors. With your heritage here being Japan, being half Asian as well, what would a win here on Sunday mean at the end of an amazing season?
Yeah, it would be a cherry on top. I have, you know, a lot of my family will be out, and my grandparents will be out, and to be able to win, you know, I don't get to see them very often. So delivering the gold medal to them was really special during that COVID year. And I think, delivering another win in front of them and for them would be even more special.
Have you won in front of your grandparents before?
No, I mean, during COVID, they weren't able to attend. So I was able to show them the medal that night at the hotel. We were able to sort of sneak around. Not that it's okay to say, but at the time, you know, we conveniently had rooms next to each other. So random. But that was how I was able to share the medal with them that night.
So golf enjoys both an undisputed number one and undisputed number two in Xander Schauffele. He's got to be considered the favourite this week. It doesn't have to be Scotty Scheffler this week in Japan. He has a certain fondness, obviously, for the tournament with the family connections there. But this guy is just playing remarkably consistent golf this year.
I think he's the most dangerous player going into 2025. That's right, I said it. I said Xander Schauffele.
You don't think there'll be a hangover year from the peak
here? Let me tell you why. He's won two majors, and those aren't even his best majors. He has seven top tens in the U.S. Open. He has four top tens in the Masters. He has two in the Open and two in the PGA. For a while, it looked as though he'd be this nearly man bumping up against runner-up finishes and top fives. And now that he's busted through the door, didn't just win one, but two majors last season, and now he will go into next year's major championship schedule knowing that, hey, I've got the two trophies, one big, one small on the shelf, and they're not even my best major championships on my resume in terms of career top 10 performance.
You're not giving much hope to the rest of the field out there, Damon. The one thing you can say about Xander Schauffele is he doesn't like to travel on Friday. This guy doesn't miss many cuts. He's actually running a streak right now, 55 consecutive cuts made on the PGA Tour. He's only missed 34 cuts in his entire career, and 12 of those came in 1 year when he was on the Korn Ferry Tour back in 2016. He's missed a grand total of 5 cuts since the summer of 2019.
Yeah.
And at this level, where the margins are so narrow, that is just extraordinarily consistent golf. And that can wear on you a little bit because he puts himself in the mix week after week after week. And if you don't leave with the trophies that often, it can be somewhat debilitating. And I think he was in danger of getting to that point over the last couple of years. But that is emphatically ended as a conversation with those two victories in majors this year.
And don't mistake his quiet nature for someone who does not care. There is a fire that burns intensely inside Xander Schauffele, and it will continue, I believe, to shine brightly in 2025.
That's for sure. He's proved that this year. And here's how you can watch the Zozo Championship. The easy part is it's the same time every day, 11 p.m. Eastern. Just make sure you start watching on the right day, of course, with the time difference Wednesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern and wrapping up the final round beginning Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. But Braden Thornberry made a late statement on the Korn Ferry Tour. 2024, he won the season-ending Tour Championship to secure his card to the big show for 2025. We're going to catch up with him as he's getting ready for his PGA Tour career. That's coming up next.
Back on golf today, we take you back to 2017 as a sophomore at Ole Miss. Braden Thornberry was honored as the recipient of the Fred Haskins Award, which is given annually to the top male golfer in college in the country. In his two-year career as a Rebel, earned 5 wins and 7 top 5 finishes. And just a couple of weeks ago, punched his ticket to the PGA Tour with that win, the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, presented by United Leasing and Finance. Shot that final round 66. Didn't get hurt by the sparks there and vaulted to 16 in the Korn Ferry Tour points list.
Certainly one of the most decorated amateurs in the game we've seen in recent years. 27 years old now from Olive Branch, Mississippi. In addition to that Haskins Award, he won the NCAA Men's Individual Championship that same year. He's been on a winning Walker Cup team, a winning Palmer Cup team, and is now, of course, a winner on the Korn Ferry Tour. And Braden joins us now. Braden, when you went to French Lick, Indiana, for that Korn Ferry Tour Finals, you were pretty far outside the number to secure one of those cards for the PGA Tour. Was that extra pressure for the week, or did you feel freed up that you could just kind of let it ride a little bit?
Yeah, I felt freed up for sure, and I kind of, I guess, a different spin on it. Once I finished fourth in Boise a few weeks before, I was able to like lock up my Korn Ferry card for sure for the next week or for the next year. So it made it very freewheeling, because the rest of the year you're kind of worried about, you know, obviously you want to play good, but when you're up in contention, you really want to post a great finish and be up there. And Just once I did that, it felt like the rest of the year was really just like freeing, and I was able to go out there and try to win golf tournaments, and was able to put myself in contention a couple times, and luckily get that one done. But I knew I needed a first or a second, and it had to be a solo second. So that's kind of a weird spot going into a tournament, but it was kind of the same thing. You just go out there and play your best every day and kind of see where you land, and luckily it was enough.
Yeah, the Tour Championship, you didn't play good. You played great. You earned your PGA Tour card. But I was struck by what you said afterward. You said, over the last 5 years, a lot of stuff didn't go your way. What did you mean?
Yeah, I just felt like a couple different, I went to Q School in 2019, and I won Q School, which now gets you on the PGA Tour. The college career I had, there's a good chance that would have gotten me on the PGA Tour. And there was just a lot of, stuff either they've changed or, ways I would have potentially gotten there sooner. And that wasn't necessarily bad luck, but just, a lot of times I would play good at almost like the wrong times, it seemed like. And it was just nice, in that interview, there was a lot of emotion, and it was a good feeling to feel like finally I played good at the right time, and it actually meant a lot, and to finally get to the PGA Tour. Because I feel like I've played a lot of good golf, like I said in that interview. And it felt like a lot of people that got to the tour weren't necessarily playing better. It was just kind of good timing and all that. So I'm just very grateful that, it happened for me now, and, I have a runway on the PGA Tour.
Are you surprised that it took you so long to get to the tour, Braden?
Yes. I mean, yes and no. It's very difficult to do. A lot of people, a lot of my peers were able to do it right away, and that's I would have preferred that as well. But really, I feel like I appreciate it a lot more now, seeing, being on the Korn Ferry for four of the last 5 years, and last year not having no status was a real, kind of wake-up call. And just to kind of be able to, build on that, and to go from basically no status to on the PGA Tour is just really special. And just I feel like I really, appreciate the hard work I've done throughout, the last 15 years, and just it just feels great.
I imagine being a Haskins Award winner and number one in the Wagger, McCormick Medal, Palmer Cup, Walker Cup, that could be jet fuel for a career, but could also be burden and pressure for a career. How much pressure did you feel when you turned professional that you had to validate, back all that big-time resume up?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that wasn't a huge factor. I feel like I had a lot of confidence because I'd won pretty much, everything I'd kind of set my mind to in college, I'd basically gone out there and won it. So I expected to do the same thing when I turned pro. And it wasn't that I went out there and was, missing every cut or anything like that. I just wasn't quite – I didn't quite have the spark that I did in college where I could go out there and, go into Sunday in eighth place and all of a sudden, and usually in the past, I'd shoot 66 and win, and all of a sudden I'm shooting, 70 and finishing 15th. And you're like, okay, I didn't necessarily do anything wrong. It was just that before it just seemed like it was all working out and lining up and all that kind of stuff. So it's hard to put your finger on the exact problem because I feel like 100% I'm a better golfer now than I was, say, in 2017 when I had, that crazy run of success. And it just felt like that year everything was kind of going right. Like you had to say, I don't really believe in luck over a career, but just certain times you really have the momentum and the luck on your side. And it felt like that's what it was. And then, as of late, like I was saying in the last 5 years, I wouldn't say I was unlucky, but just some of the stuff that could have fallen my way didn't. And for it to do that, a couple weeks ago and kind of fall my way, play the right golf at the right time, hit the shots when I needed to, it felt amazing to feel. I felt like all of that hard work kind of like coming into one moment and doing it. And that's why in that interview, I was so emotional. And I'm not a very emotional guy in general, but that was the first time I'd ever been choked up where I was really struggling to talk. And it was all from, I feel like all that culmination of hard work throughout the years and the struggle and the doubts that maybe you never make it. And just have all that in your mind at one time while you're doing, you're talking is just it's tough, and it just makes it feel even better to achieve your dream after you had doubts that maybe you weren't going to achieve it.
Are you the kind of guy who will go to the PGA Tour with a checklist of what you think you need to improve at that next level? Or are you the kind of guy who's going to trust the game that got you there? Because you do see a lot of guys who make it on tour and they start looking at the guy next to them among the best in the world, and they start searching when maybe they don't need to search.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely... This is actually one of the first off seasons I have a glaring flaw, I would say. And I'll get to it in a second. But in the past, I feel like everything, somebody be like, what do you need to work on to get to the PGA Tour? And I'm like, I don't really know. It just feels like a little bit of everything, which is kind of the worst place to be because it's hard to improve on everything. And but this year, it's been a clear kind of my, I'd say the worst quality of my game that's helped hold me back when I didn't play well was that, kind of, 6-iron, 5-iron, 4-iron, when there was long par 3s or long par 4, stuff like that. My wedges were amazing. Chipping putting's always been my strength. And I've gotten longer off the tee, which I've been working on really hard over the last like year and a half. So all of the everything's improving. And I think that just needs to come up just a little bit. And I think if I work on that part of my game and improve that even to a tour average, then I'll be right up there, you know, contending for tournaments. So that's kind of my game plan.
Well, a couple of your old Walker Cup buddies and the likes of Colin Morikawa and Scottie Scheffler are two of the best mid-iron players in the modern era. Now, would they answer your phone call now that you're going to be on the big stage with them? Do you have some buddies you can lean on, or have they changed their phone number and you can't get a hold of those guys anymore?
Oh, yeah, I still talk to those guys occasionally and stuff. They're great guys, and I'm just very happy now that I'll, you know, I was once their peers competing with them, beating them a lot, and just to be able to play against them again is, you know, an honor and stuff that, like I said earlier, I wasn't 100% sure. When you're doing your absolute best and, you know, for year after year after year, and then, you know, you're playing okay on the Korn Ferry and then you lose your Korn Ferry status, it's very disheartening because you're already doing as good as you can. So it just shows how fine I think the line is between, you know, losing your Korn Ferry card or whatever it is and getting on the PGA Tour. It's really just, it's, you know, half a shot around, something like that. And sometimes that's stuff out of your control, or sometimes that's, you know, one part of your game struggling or doing well. So, but yeah, I'm excited to get out and compete with those guys. And it's been a long time coming. I was kind of the last guy from that team, other than Stuart Hagestad, who stayed an amateur, but last guy from that team to kind of bring it all together and get out there. So it's exciting.
You mentioned how over the course of the last few years, various things have changed or emerged that would have benefited you at one stage, like Q School, PGA Tour University. There's another change on the horizon, Braden. The PGA Tour's policy board is going to vote next month on potentially reducing by 10 the number of cars that are available on the Korn Ferry Tour from 30 to 20. How do you think that's been received among Korn Ferry Tour players?
Well, that kind of rumor or whatever you would call it kind of came out, I would say, very recently. So I wouldn't say guys really got a chance to, like, know if that was true or talk about it. I think that's a big difference. Like 2030 is a big difference. Like, it's going to make it where you basically probably have to win an event, which not necessarily a bad thing, but it's unfortunate, I would say, that guys on the Korn Ferry Tour in general feel like the opportunities are getting less and less, because a big part of the PGA Tour is it's, you know, the stars of the game. That's who I want to watch. That's who everybody wants to watch. However, there needs to be a good pathway for guys to get there. Like, you know, Scottie Scheffler, Will Zalatoris, Morikawa, all those guys, they weren't stars 10 years ago. So I think you want to have it where, you know, those guys have as easy, not necessarily easy, but a good pathway that's very efficient to getting there. And I know I saw an interview with, like, Scottie's dad where he was like, you know, I think he can do great things, but, you know, getting through the Korn Ferry is tough. And I don't think you necessarily want to make, like, the main pathway to the PGA Tour tougher for guys, because you want guys to be able to get there and show that they're a star. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
Well, Braden, as they used to say on the old game show, American Idol, you are safe. Congratulations yep. on getting your PGA Tour card. We'll see you next year in 25.
Perfect. Thank you guys for having me. I'm looking forward to it out there.